98.7 FM. Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Murata.
It's going to be lit, is what I hear every single day. It's the greatest radio show ever.
Dan Bickley. Vince Murata.
It's the greatest show on earth.
Bickley and Murata.
This is the greatest.
Good morning and welcome.
I love this show.
Me too.
It's the greatest radio show that's ever existed.
It really, really is.
In case you needed a refresher for the new version of the prolonged open.
Let's cut the crap, Mr. Murata.
Bickley and Murata.
I hate everything about this show. This is the worst show in the world.
All right, happy Thursday, everybody. Good morning, Vinny. I've got a couple of different ways we can begin this program, so I kind of want to ask your advice here.
Okay.
Do we pay homage to Pat Tillman? Do I tell you about the weird mask stuff going on at my kids' schools? Or do we talk about Pete Rose?
Wow. There is a lot of ways to go.
You take door number one, door number two, and door number
three. I think we could probably do at least two of them.
Yeah.
We'll tip our cap to Pat Tillman to start the show.
Okay.
On the anniversary of his passing.
Yes, we do. It's a day that always hits in Arizona. Yeah. I'll never forget I was doing a live broadcast when it happened, and trying to make sense of that moment was, might have been the hardest thing I've ever done professionally.
I can imagine.
Or maybe second to the time when my teleprompter went out at Channel 12 for the very first time.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me TV news personalities are reliant on teleprompters? You're ruining it for me, Ben.
I'm telling you that television is harder than it looks.
It's very, very difficult.
That's what I'm telling you.
And I couldn't imagine being... being on the other side of that prompter when it went out.
The first time...
You stay classy, San Diego.
The second time it happens, you're ready for it. But the first... No one's ready for the first time. All right, the Pete Rose story, which is really, really, really good. There's a columnist in Cincinnati who has suggested that Pete Rose should be instantly named Major League Baseball's chief parlay officer. And I'm thinking it's a great idea.
CPO?
If they partnered with DraftKings, FanDuel, and MGM Resorts, and they're bringing gambling, full-on gambling to baseball, why not let Pete Rose be in charge? I love that idea.
It's a good question.
It's a great question.
You said chief parlay officer or chief par se officer?
Parlay officer.
Parlay, okay.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be an officer par se.
Gotcha.
Chili.
It's not chili par se.
All right. And the mask thing, because, you know, I am apolitical, but it was just really, really weird. 2 days ago, I got word that my kids' schools were going maskless, dropping the mask mandate, even though there's just a few weeks left in school, which I thought was kind of bizarre. But, you know, things are opening up. Yesterday, my 11-year-old got sent home to quarantine because he might have been in contact with somebody with COVID-19.
After they dropped the mask mandate.
After they dropped the mask mandate. Isn't there something weird about both those events back to back?
Yeah. I don't know if you knew this about the last year and a half, Bick. Stuff's pretty weird out there.
Yeah. Oh, it really, really is. It really is.
Yeah,
pizza.
That's a good way to get us out of that lane, Carlin. Start the program.
Garrett!
The Splash. Splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The Splash.
Cannonball coming.
The Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
Another road win for the Phoenix Suns. This one over the shorthanded Philadelphia 76ers, who played without Tobias Harris, Ben Simmons, and Seth Curry last night. But as we've seen in previous games, it wasn't easy for the Suns, even despite that missing talent. Devin Booker, largely ineffective for most of the game, scored 8 points in the last 2 minutes, leading by three with about a second left. Chris Paul uncharacteristically missed a free throw that was rebounded by Joel Embiid, who in one motion heaved it down court, and it went in and out at the buzzer to allow the Suns to escape with a 116-113 win over the Sixers.
I think that was the greatest miss in NBA history.
I watched it in real time, and I was like, oh, there's 0.8.
There's no way.
There's no way they can even come close.
The fact that
I watched it in real time, and I'm like, that was close. And then I see the replay.
And it's down.
It was down.
I know.
People are saying, a lot of people in the game are saying, that would have qualified as the greatest shot in NBA history.
Right.
And I can't really argue that. That would have been unbelievable.
I'm telling you, it was just unbelievable. So to me, that is the greatest miss in NBA history. Gordon Hayward for Butler at the end of the championship game might be
second. Yes, yes.
John Hollinger summarized last night's game perfectly. Quote, Phoenix has become really good at finishing games with more points than the opponent. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Because that's what they've done. They've outlasted a couple of good teams in overtime. Last night, they narrowly avoided an overtime.
See?
I cannot wait to have a Devin Booker conversation with you later today.
The lack of respect I get on this show. John Hollinger says something to that effect, and it's perfectly summed up. I made a similar point on the Suns earlier on a road trip, and I got scoffed at.
Yeah. Did you really? What did I scoff at?
I'm not saying it was just you scoffing. I think the key was was it the question about the Suns will win the championship if?
Something like that. That's right. If they
finish with more points than the opponents each game they play.
Yes. Forward Jay Crowder did injure his ankle in the game, sat out most of it. He only played 13 minutes. He's been ruled out for tonight's contest in Boston. Yeah, they get to do it again against the Celtics. That gets underway. I should really double check this. I believe it's at 4 o'clock. It is at 4 o'clock, and you can hear all the action here on over on ESPN, 6:20 a.m. Speaking of the Celtics, they'll be shorthanded tonight, too. Just don't know exactly how shorthanded right now. Evan Fournier is out. Jaylen Brown, Kemba Walker, Robert Williams also dealing with issues that could keep them out tonight as the Suns look for the season sweep over the Celtics. Again, we're doing scoreboard watching. Isn't it glorious? Clippers won again. They beat Memphis 117-105 at home to notch their 42nd win. They do remain a game and a half behind the Suns in the Western Conference standings. They won without Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. Luke Kennard had 28 points. Utah ahead of the Suns. They also distanced themselves with an easy 112-89 win over the Houston Rockets. Jordan Clarkson had 22 off the bench for the Jazz. So lots of teams playing real good basketball in the Western Conference right now.
It's getting fun.
Yep. Despite the cold weather, it was a good day for the D-backs in Cincinnati. They held on to win the completion of Tuesday's suspended game, 5-4 over the Reds. Then they took the nightcap, 8-5 and 10 innings in a very strange baseball game.
Oh, my goodness.
Trailing 3-0 in the ninth, Josh Van Meter against his former team clocked a 3-run homer off Amir Garrett to tie it.
Shut up, Garrett!
The D-backs exploded for 5 in the 10th to win their third straight and improve to 8-10. The series finale is underway right now in Cincinnati. Bottom of the second, Reds leading 1-0 with two outs in the second. Taylor Widener on the mound for the D-backs. But, yeah, it was a weird. They could do nothing against Tyler Mahle.
No, and the way the Reds handed them the game and then the way Cole Calhoun tried to hand it back, it was the craziest endgame sequence of events that I've seen. The D-backs find a way to win this game today. They're with one in one game of 500.
It
could be a little turning point.
Yeah. Coyotes continue to prove they don't match up well with the Minnesota Wild, losing again 4-1 this time at Gila River Arena. Game was tied at one after two periods, but the Wild reeled off three goals in the third to pull away. Season series between the two teams is now done. Minnesota took 7 of the 8 regular season meetings. Coyotes head back on the road for the next three, starting in L.A. against the Kings on Saturday. ASU Hoops actually bringing back a player instead of losing one. Forward Kamani Lawrence coming back for another crack at his senior season. He averaged 8.1 points per game in 23 games last year and got better as the season went on. And they've also added an assistant coach, Bobby Hurley, tabbing Kentucky assistant Joel Justice. He's accepted a position on Bobby Hurley's staff to fill out that bench. There we go. There's your splash for Thursday, April 22nd. Coming up, man, another win for the Suns, and there is a lot to chew on from their win in Philly. We'll get to it next. Bickley and Marotta live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Bickley and Marotta.
Bickley and Marotta. And Marotta. CP3 takes one dribble, bends, shoots, missed it short, rebound Embiid, lobs full court, at the buzzer it almost went in, oh my goodness, it rattled out, but the Suns win, 116-113, the final score, that would have gone down in the history books.
That's why you make it, John Bloom.
If Joel Embiid would have made that heave from 80 feet away after the miss on the free throw from Chris Paul, what a finish.
Yeah, John Bloom, Tim Kempton on the call on the Suns Radio Network last night. Just a wild game, a wildly entertaining game, and a good result for the Phoenix Suns as they get win number 42 on the year, and it almost had to go to overtime to get it after that desperation heave by Joel Embiid. Yeah, I mean, what can you say? You find out before the game is starting. We talked about it yesterday, Vic, that expected a full, focused effort from the Suns against a put together 76ers team, then you find out they're not put together. No, Tobias Harris.
Nope.
No Ben Simmons. No Seth Curry. It was played.
Crazy.
It was one of those rare games too that was played within 10 points. All 48 minutes, nobody had more than a 10-point lead.
Yeah. No. It was one of those games where you would have hoped that maybe it shouldn't have been that difficult, given the fact the 76ers were missing three starters. But it just kind of proved that they're a deep, really good basketball team. What, Jarrett? What are you laughing about?
I mean, it always is. It's never a blowout,
right.
Almost.
And so,
ever.
But so again, and it's these collective experiences. They're good training for us to remember what playoff basketball is going to be like, and they're good tests for the basketball team. I thought last night was one of those signature games from Chris Paul. I think that thing would have gotten sideways on the Suns had he not done what he did. I thought Javon Carter was really good, and the Devin Booker story from last night to me is really. There's a lot of meat on that bone, if you will.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. I wanted to get to Monty's quote about, you know, the approach of this team when they do face shorthanded opponents, which happens so often.
I mean, you're talking to somebody who wasn't in a position to let my guard down at all when I played in the league. So sure. I never had that luxury. But for us as a team, we just try to stick to our standards, you know, and play the way that we're supposed to play, you know, sharing the ball, defending, and competing. We had 30 assists tonight in a game where, you know, it's physical, a lot of intensity, officials, you know, it was one of those games that can wear you out, and we still had 30 assists. So that speaks to our ability to stay with one of our standards and then, you know, defending. Like I said, in the second and third quarter, I thought we defended at a really high level.
Yeah, there was that. Obviously, that was one of the trademarks of that win. Go back to that last play, the missed free throw. You could count pretty much on two hands the number of free throws that Chris Paul has missed this year. So to miss one that would put his team up four and basically end the game, even though three was enough, he was asked, there was some speculation that maybe he missed the free throw on purpose. Not so the case.
Hey, Chris, wanted to get some clarification on the last free throw. You were trying to make that, right?
Absolutely.
What was you and Mikal both looked back at him, Joel, like you were in shock that he almost made that. What was going through your head?
I was. If you have three, I always want to make a free throw to go up four. You know, I didn't miss it on purpose. And then that shot, like, that was in and out. I ain't never seen nothing like it.
Yeah, if you watch the replay, and I watched that replay like 10 times, the reaction of not just the players on the court. I mean, Devin Booker standing under the basket, watching helplessly. You could almost read his mind. Don't go in. Don't go in. It didn't go in. But the people in the front row, all with their heads in their hands. That was one crazy moment.
Listen, I like what Kellen mentioned, because I thought it was just comical the way Mikal Bridges and Chris Paul looked at Joel Embiid. It was sort of like, you kidding me, man? Well, here's what's unreal to me is, do you know what kind of strength it takes to get a basketball to travel that distance the way he shot it? He almost shot-putted the ball because of his body angle. And that was just, I couldn't believe that was almost down.
Yeah.
What a moment.
Unbelievable.
What a
moment.
Just
to get it close.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. You mentioned it. Chris Paul had his fingerprints all over this game. He was brilliant last night. There was that stretch where Javon Carter padded a lead with just some clutch three-point shooting. He got white hot. And then you're thinking to yourself, man, The Suns are in position to beat a good basketball team, shorthanded, yes, but good basketball team on their floor with Devin Booker completely being neutralized.
Mm-hmm.
And then Booker, in the last 2 minutes of the game, flipped the switch and looked like a different player. Including this.
7 on the shot clock, though, as Devin Booker gets the inbounds pass. Dribbling around Thybul. Down to 2 seconds. Booker gets to the baseline. Jumper fading away. He got it!
Oh, my!
At the shot clock buzzer, Devin Booker drills it. Off-balance shot. What a performance there. And with 13 seconds left, the Suns lead by 6.
He simply, I mean, there's two things to say. He was bad for 46 minutes of that ball game. And taken out of his game and looked uncomfortable. And
he was embarrassed.
He was
embarrassed. He was having jump shots swatted back in his face.
Yes. And Matisse Thybul is a brilliant defensive player, but it shouldn't have been that one-sided.
Right.
That was the closing performance we've been waiting for from Devin Booker. It's just weird that it happened on a night like last night.
Yeah. The degree of difficulty on the shot that basically was his revenge against Matisse Thybul was, I mean, off the charts difficult. He was going full speed to his right, drifting away from the basket because he was that desperate to get some separation because this guy had risen up and put his jump shot back into his face a couple of times. And I thought, man, the reason why this story really appeals to me is a lot of reasons. Number one, in the playoffs, the level of defense goes up considerably. Would you agree with that?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Because every guy tries to play defense. Devin Booker's never seen that kind of defense because he's never been in the playoffs. So I begin to wonder when I watch Matisse Thybul last night, is this a preview? Is Devin Booker going to be a little bit exposed? Or is Thybul just that elite of a defensive player? After the game, the 76ers were raving about this kid. They said he's a top 10 defender, if not a top 5. And it's easy to see why, the way he was just harassing Devin Booker. But I'd be lying to you if I would say that I wasn't a little bit concerned at the way he's been locked down at various points in time this season.
Especially recently.
Recently. And so I don't know what that portends. I don't know if last night was a hurdle he needed to get over. I don't know. Maybe this is all really good for him because it shows him he's going to have to be better. He's going to have to be different. I don't know. So, but he did produce at the end. He found a way on that little bank shot to jump away from Thybul, and he found a way to drift away and hit a ridiculous fallaway jumper to get it done. So he got it done. You're absolutely right. But I just wonder what the bigger takeaway is going to be.
Well, I think you could look at it the way you're looking at it. You could look at it differently and say, wow, really encouraging to be shut down like that and take over. Chris Paul talked about the timely shots from his teammates.
That's winning basketball. You know, when you play on a team like this where you expect to win night in and night out, it's going to be nice like that. And that's why you got to trust and lean on your teammates. And then, you know, when you get your opportunity, you know, that's why, you know, Book is who he is. You know, he made the timely shots. He still wants it. And, you know, I think that's said a lot about our team all season long. You know, Javon Carter hit, you know, 3 big threes, you know, and they're just timely. And we say it all the time. We truly have a team. We're not just leaning on one guy or two guys to do things every night.
Yeah. Now it's on to Boston. Mm-hmm. See if they can continue this. The winning ways on the road, and they won't have their full complement of players as Jay Crowder's been ruled out with that ankle injury. You knew something was up right away. Now, he stayed in the game for about 30 seconds, and then he was on the bench for the rest of the night.
Jay Crowder's ankle injury, this is not serious, and they can certainly win without him, but that injury is another reason to consider, do we join the resting crowd? And I was going to ask you, do you think there's any chance the Suns are going to succumb to that tonight? Sit Chris Paul tonight. What are the are there any odds of that possible? Because I don't think it's going to. In fact, I wrote a big piece about this very topic, about how the Suns are defying this trend, and people are going to really dig that about them if they can stay healthy and pull this off.
Yeah, again, I think it depends on their decision making on what their ultimate goal is. So I would say it's probably doubtful. Let's circle back around to that later on in the show. Okay. But Suns and Celtics. 4 o'clock today from Boston over on ESPN 620 AM. Text bonus right now to 620-620. Listen for your name this afternoon at 1:35 to win $500. That's bonus to 620-620. It's the Arizona Sports signing bonus. Coming up next, good day yesterday for the D-backs. Can they make it a good trip with a sweep in Cincinnati today? We'll get into all the angles next. It's Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Van Meter at the plate. Count of 2 balls, 2 strikes with one out the pitch. Swing and a drive to right. And Josh Van Meter has hit a 3-run homer to tie it up at 3 off his former team. Here's the first one. And a broken bat. Fly ball into shallow right. Calhoun in. Can't get it. Goes behind him. Runner around third being waved home. Here he comes. Here's a throw at the plate. He is out of the plate. They recovered in time and got to Kelly, who had to come up the line, first base side, and get it. But he still dived into the base runner coming to the plate and was able to tag Payton to end the inning.
It's a little bit of wackiness from Greg Schulte on the D-backs radio network last night. It was a very boring baseball game for about 8.5 innings.
It was.
And then the dam broke. Everything went wacky. The Van Meter home run ties it. I'm glad you brought it up in the splash. There's no other way to describe what Cole Calhoun decided to do defensively in the bottom of the ninth inning other than trying to give the game away.
Yeah. Yeah, listen, I didn't get that either.
And he got away with it.
I don't know what Payton was doing slowing up around second. Did he not know there were two outs? I'm like, the Reds could not have handed that game to the Diamondbacks more effortlessly than they did. What's happened to Amir Garrett? Garrett? What's happened to this guy?
Get a haircut, Garrett.
Come on, Barrett. You freak.
What's wrong with you, Harrett?
Yeah, the last 2 days, the D-backs have greatly improved their chances to win ball games by getting to Amir Garrett, who's a tough left-handed pitcher.
Used to be.
Yeah.
That ball that Van Meter hit the home run, it was an 84-mile-an-hour meatball slider. And I'm like, this guy used to be good.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah, it does. Meatball sliders.
Here's Torey Lovello on the comeback win.
It was a great comeback win for us. I think those are the type of games you got to grind through early. We were running up against pretty good starting pitching. And Merrill Kelly did a good job of keeping us in the ball game for the 5 innings that he was in there. I removed him to give us an opportunity to score some runs and build an inning, but then the bullpen took over from there and gave us a chance to play some catch up. And you pile up 8 runs and the final 2 innings of the game, you're gonna probably come out on the high side of things.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. And it both times. The D-backs have faced Cincinnati this year with Tyler Mahle on the mound. It was a different ball game once he left the game. He shut them out for 4 innings in the game here. Their bullpen implodes. Last night he goes 6 2/3, strikes out 9, walks 2, gives up only 2 hits, no runs. They get him out of the game. They're able to get to the bullpen again. I mean, talk about the frustration he must be feeling.
Listen, dude, I mean, they're up by 3 runs going into the ninth inning, and you bring in a reliever to hope he gets right. How often does that work? Not very often.
No.
And so from a managerial standpoint, that was a very bad move. Because this guy has been struggling. It's in his own head now. He has no confidence in any of his pitches. And props to the Diamondbacks for taking advantage of that opportunity. And Taylor Widener's holding up today. They're up 2-1 in the third inning. If they win this game, they're within 1 game of .500. And you might have to rethink or I might, because I've been very, very skeptical of their level of talent this year. And maybe this is just a little microburst of good play, and maybe they're going to be a really bad team. But look, if Taylor Widener puts together another really good outing today, that will be 3 for him.
Mm-hmm.
And this is coming, plus Zach Gallen returned to the lineup, plus a good outing from Madison Bumgarner, granted it was only 5 innings, plus the fact that Ketel Marte's coming back soon, you might go, okay, you know what? All right, maybe we were wrong.
Yeah, this stretch that they're under, I mean, they've won 3 straight for the first time this year. Like you said, if they get it done today, they're within 1 game of .500. This is a stretch that they needed, especially on this extended road trip. Torey Lovello talked about having a stretch like this and doing it without Marte.
It's it's one of the amazing qualities that this team has. We talk about adaptability and getting an opportunity for certain guys to get in there and go out and perform and show us what they could do in tough conditions here in Cincinnati. A tough environment in Washington, D.C. We're playing good baseball on the road. And I think it's just an incredible feature that this team has. We got a lot of depth. We got a lot of hungry players. And we can't wait to layer back in a couple of our injured guys. We know they're out there doing their thing to get healthy. They got a team of people around them that are coaching them and treating them. And when they come back, we're just going to be that much better. It makes a statement. I talk about making statements all the time. The guys that are out there every single day are making great statements.
Yeah.
I can't argue that. Here's the other thing I like about this baseball team. Twice now this season, they've put out videos of doing something that resembles a haka dance in the clubhouse. That's a good sign. That's a sign of a team that feels something. Or maybe they just like to dance.
It is a fun-looking dance.
Oh, it's great.
Here's what I like. If they win today, they essentially will win 3 games in 22 hours.
Yeah, right. That can turn your season around. That can jumpstart a few things. So I'm impressed.
Well, here's another one from Tori talking about the span, the 24-hour span, just how weird it has been.
Yeah, for sure. The outcome of 3 baseball games will be determined in a matter of 36 hours or something close to that. So that's very awkward for us. And we've been on the baseball field for a long time today. We were on the baseball field for, a long time last night and in some really, really tough weather conditions. We talk about mental toughness. We try to define that here. I think we showed a lot of mental toughness. These guys didn't let some of the outside distractions bother them and went out and won 2 ball games today and put us in a pretty good spot for a successful 3-game series. And we want to do it right tomorrow. We want to come out and play our best baseball and play focused baseball tomorrow and give a great effort.
Yeah, strange stretch indeed, but
it's much less than
36 hours. Tori's math was way wrong. It's less than 24 hours, right, like Jared pointed out. That could be the impetus for something good going into the weekend, last 3 before you come home for your first real extended stay at home all season long. I didn't expect to be talking about this team being 8-10 at this point.
No, I didn't. I didn't either. But again, this is a very unique set of events here. It's the Madison Bumgarner finally gets a good outing. The Taylor Widener surprise at the dead end of the rotation. I did not expect Taylor Widener to be this good. I just didn't. And then you've got the span of victories. That comeback last night was so improbable.
How improbable was it?
you might look back and go, that was a real turning point in this season. So I hope for the best.
To be fair, many of their wins this season are against the Reds.
Yeah, whatever.
Specifically. So.
Whatever. And again, they've got to play a lot of good teams in the NL West, but they're playing at a level above which I thought they were capable, because the starting rotation, it just did not look solid to me going into the season.
Yep. The Reds got a run in the bottom of the first, solo home run from Winker, and then D-backs answered with 2 in the top of the third, an RBI double from Pavin Smith and a sac fly from Wyatt Matheson that scored Taylor Widener. So it's 2-1 now in the bottom of the third with 2 outs in that series finale in Cincinnati. Actually, the D-backs just got out of that inning. So they go to the top of the fourth now in Cincinnati. That game over on ESPN 620 AM. Coming up next, NFL passing a slew of new rule changes, and some people aren't happy about one that's been pretty popular. We'll tell you about it next. Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Marotta. Hash marks.
Yeah, the NFL yesterday, it happened during our show, but lots of new rules on the books for the 2021 season. Among them, an onside kick adjustment to even out the numbers, which were skewed for the kicking team, for the receiving team in a big way after a 2018 rule change. More help from the replay official. One that will make a lot of people very happy. No more overtime in preseason games. Amen to that. What took so long for that?
Oh, right. Like, you really need an outcome. You know what I mean?
And, of course, the loosening of the restriction on uniform numbers. There was also a very specific rule change.
Okay, hold on before we move on.
Yeah.
Something I didn't think of with the numbers. First of all, there was a Tyrann Mathieu tweet that said this rule is going to bring out the diva in the boys this year. I'm not sure exactly what he was talking about.
I think he followed up by saying also, like, the only numbers I care about are the ones on the stat sheet or something.
Okay. Tom Brady, more interestingly, said this is going to create bad football because it's going to be harder for people to know who to block. I had never thought of that.
On his Instagram story, good luck trying to block the right people now, going to make for a lot of bad football.
Wow.
Oh, wah. Tommy.
Wah.
Instead of 55 being the mic, now it might be 7 is the mic.
Yeah.
Learn to adjust.
Block he doesn't want to get hit.
Block
you know
the giant guy running at you.
That's usually
not the guy running the other
direction.
That's
usually a good rule of thumb.
Right.
Isaiah Simmons was tweeting about.
Do you remember how David Johnson would sometimes just, a guy would come right at him and he wouldn't even see.
It's because he wasn't sure what number he was wearing.
He would just freeze. He would just look and go, what?
Isaiah Simmons was talking about changing his number on Twitter yesterday.
Do you remember the one dog, Lance Johnson, played for the White Sox many years ago?
Yeah.
I covered that team, and he was a really cool dude, but he also was really flaky. And there were 3 or 4 times a season when he would take a lead off of first base, and he would flake out, and he would just zone out. And the pitcher would throw over, and Lance wouldn't even move. It would happen 3 or 4 times a year. You know?
Yeah.
Generally, you get picked off first base, you're diving back to the bag. He would just stand there and go, oh, no. That's something you would do. Barrett!
Then give the old Eric Bledsoe. Yeah I wasn't paying attention.
Wasn't paying attention. Sorry. Just thinking about something.
You paying attention, Ron?
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah. Thinking about something else when you're taking a lead off is probably not a good idea. Jarrett, stop rubbing your eye. It's not good for you. Okay, let's move on to this one rule change that I absolutely despise.
Which one?
The enforcing taunting penalties in the upcoming season.
An emphasis on it. Kevin Seifert wrote on ESPN.com, the NFL has experienced a familiar cycle with taunting fouls in recent years. It began in 2016 with a surge of flags for celebrations, ball spinning, and twerking. The league backed off in ensuing years, especially after, as it related to post-touchdown celebrations. Only 11 taunting penalties last season, 9 in 2019. So I'm not sure. That's not a huge number. Why the emphasis now?
Okay, I don't get this at all. This is going to lead to penalties that drive fan bases insane this coming season. First of all, taunting on a football field. The game is so violent and so full of risk and so full of fear and so full of aggression. You can't legislate guys' emotions after making a huge tackle or a huge hit or a huge catch. Why even bother? This is something that the NFL will police itself. If you are a football player and you stand over a player and taunt them, you'll get yours. There doesn't need to be official engagement in this area of the game.
But the "your get yours" part is the thing they don't want.
Well, I
don't
have
want
a problem.
To escalate
I don't
things.
Have a problem with the standing over a player. I don't have a problem with that being a flag. That's quite clearly a taunt, and there might be something attached to it as well on the back end of it. The way I view it is, and it could be any rule. Whenever the NFL comes out in an off season and says, fill in the blank is going to be an emphasis this upcoming season, we've seen it with other things. Heck, we saw it with the Cardinals adjusting to Cliff Kingsbury's offense. Remember all the trouble they had with signals and hand claps? It's always an emphasis early on, meaning preseason, and people will adjust and they'll work it out. And 3 weeks into the season, we'll probably forget that this was even on the books.
I hope so, because this is something I cannot stand. When college football got involved in the end zone celebrations and they went looking to throw flags, I mean, what is the point of that? You don't want things to escalate? They're playing football. Things have escalated from the opening kickoff. Unless you're the Cardinals on the road and Carolina. But you know what I mean? It's I don't know why the NFL can't just embrace some of the stuff that it pretends to dislike so much.
Mm-hmm. The other one, the onside kick rule. I don't know if you saw the numbers that they were talking about with the onside kick after they tried to make it safer in 2018. Let me find the numbers here. Last year, 3 onside kicks were recovered on 67 attempts. The NFL's lowest total and recovery rate since at least 2001. Total recovery rate since 2018 rule change has been 8.3. The average during the previous 2 decades before that rule change was 19.7. So I like the idea of giving the kicking team a little better chance to get it.
Mm-hmm.
But I know there was also a proposal out there to make the onside kick go away. And that's what we've talked about all these years. They're going to do away with kickoffs. How does that affect the onside kick? Well, there's this school of thought says, all right, instead of an onside kick, deep in your own territory, you get a 4th and 15 play. Basically, one play to make 15 yards to keep possession.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably about the conversion rate that they want to get the onside kick back to. So why not do it?
I like it.
But they're still sticking with the onside kick.
Yeah, I know. That would be exciting. It'd be fun to watch that. See if a team can dial up that play. The onside kick as a mechanism to get the ball back in an endgame situation, it's way too much of a roll of the dice. There should be something a little more achievable. You know, and I understand finding an odds, finding a percentage of conversions that kind of fit the moment. Okay, I get that, but I'd rather it be a football play than an onside kick.
Because the problem with an onside kick is even if you executed absolutely perfectly,
mm-hmm.
you're still at the mercy of the ball just bouncing the exact right way.
Yeah.
Like, you could kick it exactly how you're supposed to kick it. The offense could run right, and then just if the ball just bounces the wrong direction.
Well, right.
And that's the case in every play in football.
You're taking there's too much endgame responsibilities on kickers. It doesn't jibe with what their role should be in the NFL.
It is football.
Well, I know that, but to me, there should be a mechanism in place. If your team has made a miraculous comeback or scored a late touchdown, and there should be a mechanism that gives them a real outside chance at getting back the football that doesn't involve the kicker. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. The other announcement the league made yesterday is that, mark your calendars, Bick, Wednesday, May 12th. We will learn what the schedule looks like.
Oh.
It gets bigger every year.
I don't know why. I love that. It's so weird because we already know the opponents, but I love that day.
Yeah, now we're like 3 weeks away. There's an announcement to make the announcement. That's how big the schedule release has gotten in the NFL.
That's so funny.
It's crazy. I mean, we know all the opponents, but just putting the puzzle together is fascinating for a lot of people. And this year more so. I mean, last year, you know, the schedule came out and there was the excitement, but the element that was missing for so many people was making plans to go on road trips to watch NFL games.
Yeah.
Just didn't exist last year. And, you know, their goal is stated. They want to have close to full stadiums mm-hmm. come September. So after a year hiatus, that'll be a really big day for a lot of
people.
Cannot
wait. Did you see that the Dodgers are going to have vaccinated sections? Yeah. That's it. But people still have to wear masks. But they're going to sell those tickets, and they're not going to have to be podded, I guess, if you will.
Yeah, okay, you won't have to be socially distant.
Yeah. Here's the last thing about the NFL rules that I thought was interesting.
I'm sorry, and we might not get back to it. Mm-hmm. Didn't the Dodgers consider that all of their fans are probably infected with other things?
the other
Botox rule, is not an infection.
Right. Vanity is not an infection. All right, the rule that going into this period had intrigued the most people was the Baltimore Ravens overtime proposal.
Yes,
where you could pick. Okay, what are we doing? Where do you want the ball to be placed, and who's going to take the ball? That was the most creative, engaging rules changed offered up there. They chose not to act on it, which tells you what, that they might really like it, but it's too radical for the here and now.
Well, they saw how people reacted to the Super League, and they're just all freaked out by it. People hate change.
Uh-huh. That's a good point.
People marching in the streets mm-hmm. with signs.
Mm-hmm.
This is all about greed. Yeah, but there's a lot on the books for the NFL 2021 in terms of rule changes. Coming up next, we'll talk to an old friend. The great Mike Golic joins us straight ahead. It's Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.